I'm Helen Jeremy from the Friends of Brisbane Botanic Gardens and Sherwood Arboretum. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the opening of Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Cutha. In this episode, we're also going to celebrate the long association that the Queensland Council of Garden Clubs has had with the Mount Cutha Gardens. QCGC has been there the whole journey. To help us commemorate, we're joined by Phil Adam, the president of QCGC. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Well, you've been president of QCGC for about 8 years, which is a long time, but I gather that your involvement with garden clubs has been longer than that and indeed wider than just with the council.
Indeed. I first joined a garden club, which was actually Albany Creek Garden Club, in 2005, which was just after I retired. And after that, I joined the Begonia Society, where I was secretary for a number of years. Not any longer, I'm still on the committee. And I'm also a partner member of a group called Perennial Poppies, which is a club that has around about 300 to 400 members. And my wife is treasurer of that club. So that's how I come to be a partner member there. And then some time ago, I was strong-armed into the job of president of QCGC.
And by the sound of it, you probably have a very nice garden at home. Do you get time to be in it?
That is, no, we don't. To be honest, we don't. We're working on it again. It became overgrown for a bit, and now we've gone in and taken quite a few of shrubs and trees that have just got a bit too big, removed them, and we're rebuilding so that we are trying to make it back to what it once was, because it used to be a very nice garden, but we got a bit too busy.
Yeah, well, gardens keep evolving as well, don't they? And tastes as well. And I look back at some things I've planted ages ago and think, time to change.
Yes. Well, our garden is not very big. We're only on an ordinary suburban block, but it's in three or four different sections. So at the front, we've got a lot of salvias, plants like that, a lot of flowering plants, shrubs. The back is more tropical, subtropical. Then I've got all my begonias hiding around the back as well. And down one side is camellias. And on the other side are vegetables and fruit trees.
Oh, wow. Yeah, quite a selection.
Yeah. Doesn't take long to mow the grass because there isn't much left.
Yes. Now, you've been involved with botanic gardens as well. And I understand you're a guide at the City Gardens.
Yes, I did. I guided at the City Gardens for a few years. I stopped doing that about 5 or 6 years ago, largely because I was having knee trouble, as it happens when you get a bit older, and I've had to have knee replacements, and it just became a little bit too difficult to do at that time. So I'm no longer guiding there, but I did do it for a number of years.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't see how you'd be able to fit it in with your presidential duties at the QCGC. It sounds like quite a large organisation. Can you tell us more about it?
Right, well, QCGC was formed in 1967 and it largely grew out of the environmental activists. A number of the people who formed the committee in the first place had been involved with things like Queensland Conservation Council, all those sorts of organisations, Friends of the Earth and so forth. And they got together because a number of people in garden clubs were saying, well, they'd like to have a say about certain things. Around about that time, you had some rather large controversies going on, things like sand mining on Fraser Island and so on. And so the idea was to form an umbrella group that could speak for the garden clubs. Now, it has changed since then because it's nearly 60 years old now. And there's less emphasis on that aspect of things. But we have around about 125, 126 member clubs. They're scattered throughout the state from Cairns right down to the border and west. And we don't really know how many people that represents because a lot of gardeners are in more than one club.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be anywhere between 5,000 and 6,000 or up to 10,000 or more. So a lot of people are involved one way or another. So most of the clubs are in the southeast corner, of course, because they're the ones that are able to attend events and ones that we can communicate with a lot more easily. But nevertheless, we are still do as much as we possibly can to service the remote and regional clubs as well.
Are clubs that are members, are they sort of purely divided on a geographical basis, or do they're actually clubs which do a certain type of plant as well? Are they members?
There are really three different types of groups. The first group are what I'd call the district or regional clubs. So something like Albany Creek, for example, would be a district club, the Gap, Macravat, quite a number of those. And that's the bulk of the membership. But there are also a number of specialist horticultural societies, such as the Begonia Society, half a dozen orchid societies, cordyline societies, bromeliad societies. There's quite a few of those. And then we also have organisations which are part of it that are actually running shows.
Yes.
So Wandai, for example, and Mount Marburg, and there are a couple of others as well that actually just run horticultural garden shows that are members of QCGC as well.
Yeah, so it's quite a wide range of people who are involved, isn't it, with different interests and locations.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, there are.
Yeah. So what are the aims when for the council then these days? As you said, it's evolved from some of the early beginnings.
Well, the first aim, I suppose, is to encourage people to get into gardening and to try to help people to extend their horticultural knowledge and to get pleasure out of mm-hmm. their gardening activities. So that's a fairly important aim. But in addition to that, QCGC tries to provide services to the clubs. And there are two main ways in which we do that. Firstly, we provide a newsletter which contains information about what's going on in the gardening world, information about environmental issues, etc. But we also run events, and we run five major events during the year. The first is the Plant and Floral Fair, which is actually a competition. Anybody from any garden club can enter. We have something like 60 different categories of competition.
Oh,
we have commercial plant sellers. We have some of the horticultural societies, such as the Herb Society, for example, and various floral art groups provide displays. So that runs over a couple of days at the Mount Coota Auditorium, usually in April, and next year will be April again, about the 9th or 10th, I believe. The second thing we run is what's called the President's Day. And that's not for me, that is for the presidents of the clubs. And at that particular meeting, we try to provide information about matters that are of some importance for the administration and management of the clubs. So, for example, last year, because a lot of clubs were advised that they may have tax liabilities.
Oh, yes, yes.
And that caused a lot of consternation around the place. So we managed to bring up the senior tax person from Sydney for the day to speak to the club presidents, secretaries and treasurers about what they needed to do in order to meet their obligations in that regard. This year, the one we've just finished, we ran an item on funding. So we had a management consultant explain to the clubs and show how to go about doing funding applications and things like that. So the President's Day is a working day in a sense. Then we run a Friendship Day, which is a fun day, where we have a guest speaker, we run a quiz, it's a food, just a good fun day. This year we had about 150 people there for that. And the next thing on the list is the Fashion Parade. And I'm always annoyed because they won't let me model. It's just not fair, I think. But anyway, that's coming up in late August. And finally, at the end of the year, we run a Christmas function. But every second year, that involves handing out awards. And we have four categories of awards. We award the person who has been most influential within a club. We have an award for the person who has been most influential in the community, the club which has been most influential in the community, and the person who has done the most for horticulture in general. Now, those awards are usually handed out by the patron, and our current patron is the husband of the Governor of Queensland, Professor Graham Nimmo. And that seems to alternate. So with each governor, one term it will be the governor who's the patron, next time it's their spouse. So Graham is our patron at this occasion. So they're the five major events. But in addition to that, we also have a presence at a number of other activities. So we'll have a presence at the Nambour Garden Show, where we are promoting the clubs. We are encouraging people to, if they want to join a club, we give them information about how to go about doing that, where the clubs are, that sort of thing. We do the same thing at the exhibition. That's coming up in a few weeks. And lately, Marburg, and last year it was Pine Rivers, but Pine Rivers is no longer running into the future. So that's another way in which we're trying to service the clubs by getting information out there to the general public as to how they might join and become part of it. Because one of the things we're finding now, of course, is a lot of people are living in units and retirement villages, things like that, where often people in retirement villages are people who had big gardens or good gardens, but they've now got small spaces. And so it's much more difficult for them. People living in units, of course, they can only garden on the balcony or indoors. So a lot of young people are in that sort of category. They're interested. They'll come along. They buy plants. They do all that sort of thing. But it's hard to get them organised into a club. There is no club which actually services that section of the community at the moment. We'd like to form one. So if anybody's got an idea, well, we'll follow it through, that's for sure.
I think it's a problem a lot of clubs have with the fact that younger people are very busy with their work and family commitments, and it tends to be sort of older retirees who really start making the backbone of these clubs. There's a couple of things you've mentioned which I think are really important, and that's the provision of just some umbrella guidance in a way to the club, which are members, because the complexities of running a club now are very difficult, and with you, as you mentioned, taxation and funding and things like that, and for everybody to try to work that out themselves is so hard. So an umbrella organisation is important. But what I think even surpasses the importance of that is the way you bring the community together. And whilst we can learn about our gardening from books or TV shows, I reckon some of the best stuff I've got is from talking to other people, because there's so much knowledge out there and so many people who are just brilliant gardeners, and they're really happy to share.
Yes, that's true. One of the other things about the garden clubs is that it's one of the few places you can actually get hold of old-fashioned plants. The nursery industry itself is often promoting newly developed plants, new releases, that sort of thing, and that's fine. But the gardens that people have been cultivating for 100 years have got plants that are successful. And the clubs and the societies are some of the only places where you can actually still get some of those plants. And I'll get into the begonias just about here, because very few garden centres actually sell begonia plants. If they do, it'll be a very limited range of half a dozen. So if you want to get something that's a bit rare, a bit different, a bit more spectacular sometimes, the only place you can get it from is from the society itself, either by being a member or by attending one of its sale days. And that's the other thing that the societies often do. They have big sale days where you can get access to plants that you can't get anywhere else. So gardeners are actually preserving some of the biological diversity, some of the heritage of gardening, and that's not necessarily being preserved anywhere else. Mm-hmm.
The way people sort of make their gardens is probably very different now to 50 or 60 years ago. I can remember when I was a kid, my mother used to come home with cuttings from whenever she'd been to somebody's place. So if someone had came, they'd leave with a cutting from the garden, and that's basically where all the plants came from, whereas now we tend to go out and buy them.
That's right. And, well, that's what happens at garden clubs. People share those things. And that's always good because you know they're going to be successful. They've been growing in the area and they will work. Sometimes, and I don't mean to be too critical about this, but sometimes when you buy plants from the big garden centres, those plants have come up from southern states.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're not necessarily acclimatised to southeast Queensland. So you can have a few losses when that happens. It's not universal and it's not everywhere, but it is a factor.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how the first humid, soggy summer sorts out which plants will survive in your garden long term.
That's right. Well, you tend to lose more when it's wet than you ever do when it's dry.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to turn now to QCGC's involvement with Mount Cutha Gardens. I recently read a history about the start of the Mount Cutha Gardens, which was written by two former guides of the gardens, Barbara Winteringham and Ray Stewart. And in it, they had talked about a committee which had been formed in the late 60s to start planning the gardens. And they're actually members of the garden clubs on that committee. And they also mentioned that garden clubs had contributed out-of-print books, which weren't easy to find anymore, for the library collection. And so really, we can literally say that the garden club organisations have been involved with the Mount Cutha Gardens right from the start. And how did it evolve from there? Because, you know, before I was talking about the plaques, and that brings there so many projects which have been funded.
Well, there's quite a long list of projects, some of which have been fully funded by QCGC. A lot of them have been partially funded by QCGC. And some of them, some of the seating, the shelters in various bus shelters, shelters in some of the other parts of the garden, these are things that the clubs and the QCGC have actually taken part in. And some of the plaques to commemorate the curators, past curators, they're often fully funded by QCGC. So we've had that kind of involvement for quite some time in helping to provide and develop some of the facilities that are available at Mount Cutha. We've also, at times, probably not so much recently, but certainly at times in the past, have provided plants and have actually taken part in developing some of the collections that are there. So there's been that type of involvement. A lot of it's developed as a personal relationship, really, between the people running QCGC, past presidents, past secretaries, and the curators.
Mm-hmm.
And that was particularly important during the term of Ross and also Dale, because they were there for a long time. And, of course, now we have Prue as the new curator. She's only been formally appointed for a couple of weeks,
yeah,
but
she's been
in the job for 12 months or so, and she's already showing that sort of link by offering to provide facilities, provide herself, and also provide some of her key gardeners to actually speak and to provide information. So hopefully that kind of relationship with the curator will continue to be an important part of the relationship between QCGC and the gardens themselves. So, it's often been developed in that way.
Yeah, it's great that there's a two-way relationship, and I can see information exchange would be really useful to be able to hear from the professional gardeners from the botanic gardens in your garden club would be very enlightening. And also, there'd be so many experts out in the community about particular types of plants who can share their long-term knowledge back to the gardens as well.
Well, that's certainly true. the gardeners have their own jobs, their own levels, their own expertise, and particularly when you get into some of the more specialised types of plants, there would be people in the various societies whose levels of knowledge and expertise probably exceeds what is actually available in the garden itself.
Yes.
I can certainly say that's true in the begonia sense, because we have a couple of people who are internationally recognised. Plants have been named after them in the US and other places. So if that expertise can be tapped into, that also helps with the development of the gardens themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. The projects which QCGC have helped fund are really, I think, well thought out ones. If you walk around the gardens, there are shelters which are scattered throughout the gardens in just the right place where you feel like you'd like to sit down and enjoy some time there. And then there's the wonderful places like the cacti and bromeliad house and the fern house, which are very popular places for people to visit. I don't think I've ever been in the fern house when there isn't somebody else there at the same time. So these are really huge contributions. The most recent contribution was through the vine arbor at the front of the visitor centre. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, well, the development of projects like that takes quite a while, and there's a lot of discussion between QCGC and the gardens as to what it is that they're looking for. Then they have to get the thing designed. It has to be costed. You've got to go through all of that, work out what you can do, what you can't do. So it can take 18 months or more before a project which is first thought of, before it can even come to fruition in any way. So with the vine arbour, and that was only a couple of years ago, QCGC contributed $10,000 to that project. But we're broke now, so. Well, not quite, but the next big project will probably take another couple of years before we're in position to be able to do that. Because in between then we had the plaque for Ross McKinnon as well.
Yes.
But none of the projects are just anybody's single idea. They always take some discussion between, it's what the garden itself feels they need and where they want something and what they want in those particular places. And then it's a case of whether or not we're in a position to assist with it.
Well, it has been a long-term involvement. There have been projects which have helped, you know, back in the 80s, in the 90s, and again. So it's something which will keep happening, which is lovely.
It should do.
Yeah.
Well, there's no intention to not have it happen. Involved with motor neurone disease, approached us to say, would you be interested in doing something like this? So we then go to the clubs and say, all right, what they're looking for is a club to plant and to grow on a number of seedlings, which can then be brought in for the day of planting. And that's how that actually works. So we're always open to that kind of thing. But again, it has to be negotiated with the gardens themselves. They've got to have a space. They've got to have the. It's got to be something they are prepared to and want to do. But we're quite happy to get to clubs, and we always get that sort of support from the clubs if there's a project of that sort that people want to do.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. And How do people get involved with their garden club? If you know, someone's listening and they think, oh, I'd really like to find my local club, what's the best thing for them to do?
Well, there are a number of ways of doing it, but through QCGC, one of the ways they can do it is simply go on the website, because we have a list of the clubs and contact details on the website. Now, those contact details are usually just a phone number. There can be, what you have to be a bit careful with there is that some of the phone numbers are club numbers, some of the email addresses are club email addresses, but we don't publish personal email addresses. But the phone numbers may be personal. So what they can do is ring that person, and if there's been a change, because changes happen during the year, so the numbers are not always totally up to date, but they mostly are, that whoever's on the end of the phone, if they're not the one responsible anymore, they'll be able to tell them who is. There's also a list by district. We have a map which shows where the various clubs are located throughout the state. That helps with the district clubs. The societies, the horticultural societies, are different in that they extend across the entire state and often interstate and international as well, so that they don't necessarily have a set place where they exist. So,
yes. You know,
but the website's there to do that. And if they can't actually find it on the or not happy with what they're finding there, they can actually contact QCGC directly and we will help them find a club.
Yeah. You're obviously at the Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Cutha, quite regularly, by the time you go to your meetings there in the auditorium and the shows and things. What sort of favourite part do you have in the gardens?
That depends a bit on the season of the year, doesn't it? All right. So I admit to being a bit of a flower person. So for me, the camellia area is one of the ones I like a lot. And also the Japanese garden when the azaleas are out. I guess those two would probably be amongst my favourites. I look at the bonsai house and they're fantastic. I've tried to grow bonsai. And I put that in the past tense because I haven't had a lot of success. But no, the camellias and the azaleas, they're the ones that I really, really like. But seasonally, the whole garden changes with each season. Each section has its own time. And it's always hard to pick favourites. But
yes.
If I have to, that's where it is.
Yeah. Well, certainly the camellias have been looking pretty good through July and it's the magnolias are coming out. It's a very, very pretty place in the gardens at that time of year. Yes. Phil, I'm really glad that we've had the chance to document QCGC's involvement with Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Cutha. It's been an important long association and it's wonderful to hear about how it has worked both ways. Thank you for coming to help us learn more about QGCC and what it's done, and it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Great. Well, once again, we've got something else to look at in Brisbane Botanic Gardens at Mount Cutha. When you're there next, why don't you keep an eye out for buildings which might have a bronze plaque on them and go and read it and remember about the Queensland Council of Garden Clubs and the importance they have in our gardening community in Queensland. We'll be back with another podcast episode to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the opening of Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Cutha, so make sure you join in next time. The Friends would like to thank the Brisbane Lord Mayor's Community Fund, Councillor Greg Adaman, and Brisbane City Council Libraries for supporting our podcasts.